This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:18 in the morning, you're listening to The Morning Run with Shazana Chuang and Chen Li. But in the meantime, let's talk about urban development. The revived MRT3 project, the final piece of Klang Valley's public transportation network, is expected to be completed in 2030, spanning 51 kilometres along the perimeter of KL at an estimated cost of 40 billion ringgit.
MRT Core, the project developer and asset owner, is bullish on the economic multiplier effect on the project can deliver, as well as the development benefit. One of the initiatives under the MRT3 project is the building of affordable homes above the car park facilities of at least 8 stations. CEO Zarif Hashim said these plans will not only maximize land use, but also help to alleviate the shortage of affordable housing in the city.
Yeah, this sounds like a great idea on paper, but previous transport developments in KL have had at best mixed results in terms of impact to the surrounding urban locations. So the question really is, can the MRT3 be a true catalyst for urban regeneration in KL?
So joining us for some thoughts on this is Azif Azuddin, independent urban mobility researcher. Azif, good morning. Thank you so much for joining us today. So MRT Corp aims to make the MRT3 line a catalyst for urban development. But let's take a look at what exists already. To what extent have previous KL public transportation projects helped urban regeneration?
Right. So if you look at places like university, such as Kampung Kerinci or Bangsa South, KL Central, Pasar Seni, Bukit Bintang City Centre, which is Putrajaya and Imbi. Now, these are some of the more salient examples where transit projects have led to urban regeneration, right? Where metro stations in those areas help basically fertilise the grounds for development and consequently commercial and social life. However, we do have instances where it's kind of difficult to say if transit projects like the Kelana Jaya line has directly spurred urban regeneration. So places like Kelana Jaya, where development was already underway, even in the late 90s, right? Or Subang, where Wave, the LRT station running through it, was one of the more busy urban centres in the Klang Valley. I mean, one could argue that the LDP highway had more to do with that than the transit urban projects.
So Azif, what would a transit-oriented development of MRT3 look like?
Right. Like, honestly, we don't actually have proper TUDs in Klang Valley, at least not in the truest sense, right, where one can live, work and play in those areas. What we have instead are what we term TADs, which is transit adjacent developments, where transit access is secondary to the development of an area. And the simplest way to think about it is, how easy is it or how hard is it to access transit hub without a car or motorcycle? Now, real TODs would center the development around transit access, where in terms of rail and bus connection and pedestrian access. Now, MRT Core needs to really take that into serious consideration if it really wants to develop proper TODs, essentially.
So MRT Core has touted its plans to build affordable housing along the MRT3 line as one of the project's selling points. In particular, the proposal to build housing above multi-storey car parks. Is this feasible and what are the challenges?
It's feasible, but the question is whether or not we will be successful. Now, for example, Sri Rai MRT, right, is an example of a strata residential. I think it's called Seville at Cheras in Batu Sembilan. Now, it's built on top of a connected multi-story car park intended for both the residents and the public. And I lived there before, actually, is why I know about it. But because the lower level parking is meant for the public, now that's never actually been opened, even many years after its completion. So everyone who goes there actually parks, the public who goes there actually parks around the area by the roadside, but never in the multi-story parking. But of course, it also depends on the location, right? Certain stations have park and ride facilities, especially on the ones outside Kuala Lumpur or the edges of it. Now, the main question here is, who is the multi-story parking meant for? The people who will live upstairs in the affordable homes or those who will drive to the stations, right? And while it sounds like a good idea on paper, it doesn't seem fleshed out well, especially when you start seeing more holes when you examine it. So the core question that MRT Core needs to answer is this: what is the core problem they're trying to solve? Home ownership, congestion, ridership, revenue streams, maybe all four?
Right. So there are a lot of different, the reasoning behind this, it needs to be fleshed out further by MRT Corp. Do you see this as a means of subsidizing losses on train operations for MRT Corp? Because we do know that public transportation is, in most cases, loss-making eventually.
Yeah, of course. And I think the model that MRT Corp is trying to follow is basically what's happening in Hong Kong, right, under the MTR, where the government provides land development rights, they just pay the greenfield land premium, and they develop the property, they develop the land alongside with private developers, and they take a cut from it, right? Mm. So I'm saying it's possible, but I do question whether it's affordable here, Now, if you look at studies over the past few years, all findings point towards the fact that properties close to MRT Sungai Buloh lines are out of reach, even for the middle income class. And this is true. When the majority of transit projects where the development of the rail is increases land value by 30%. And unfortunately, MRT Corp does not have the same level of meticulous planning and cooperation with local authorities and government to be able to pull off what MTR has done in Hong Kong. And because we know it'll be subsidized by government, how is this sustainable?
I like that you bring an MTR into the picture, because if revenue is a problem or is an issue that MRT Corp tries to overcome, would building commercial properties or commercial projects be more viable in this case?
Ideally, it would. But if you were to examine the MRT as the best example of how this will look like, because that is one of the main projects that they've done proper cooperation with private developers, right? Even then, the certain areas where the stations have flourished are far too few compared to the ones that have, if that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, as if one of the significant complications is the fact that public transport ridership has deteriorated significantly in the wake of COVID-19. I think Rapid Rail has talked about how they want to raise ridership to by 70% from last year's levels to 560,000 daily riders. I think that's still a long way off pre-COVID levels of 700,000 riders per day. Do you see that as a possibility in terms of public transport ridership increasing again?
Well, at this junction with reduced ridership, it's tending to clean that the demand by below. By the way, I see, yes, because the completion of the MRT 3 is going to be in 2030, that's 7 years. There's a lot of things can change in between post-pandemic. It's a bit speculative to see whether it might work, but I do believe in time, usually we see ridership patterns change after 3 years. So I do expect ridership to increase. The question is, we have to wait and see, to be honest.
And last mile connectivity has always been a major flaw of KL public transport. I mean, you've spoken about the MRT 3 in previous conversations on the Breakfast Grill. What should be taken into consideration for MRT 3 to avoid, or at least to minimize this last mile connectivity gap as they start to plan this development?
Yeah, so this isn't a burden just for MRT Corp to bear. There is no doubt that when the MRT 3 is completed, Prasarana will deploy feeder buses to bridge the first mile, last mile gap, right, from the station to end destinations. But local authorities like DPKL and local councils also need to be involved in improving first, last mile infrastructure, particularly pedestrian access to the bus stops and train stations. And this may look like things like maintaining and improving pathways, carving out proper bicycle lanes, increasing overall safety for pedestrians. And these are the responsibilities of local councils that need to work hand in hand with transit service providers like Rapid KL or Smart Selangor. And only by collaborating in creating a better first mile infrastructure is where we can properly see the gaps being filled.
Azif, thanks very much for speaking with us. That was Azif Azuddin, an independent urban mobility researcher, giving us his comments on how the MRT3 could provide a catalyst for urban development, but also pointing out a lot of the factors that come into play in this. And if you want to listen to a longer conversation on the potential impact of the MRT3, look up the Breakfast Grill podcast titled MRT Circle Line Could Transform the City. Philip C. spoke to Azif and Hamdan Abdulmajid of Think City on this issue. It's well worth a listen.
Yeah, I just want to say that in terms of KL's public transport system, specifically the rail system, right, which is essentially only about 20 to 30 years old, the LRT rail system, the MRT 1 and 2, and now the MRT 3. Comparatively speaking, compared to, say, the New York subway or the London Tube, right, the infrastructure is really, really good. It's amazing. I mean, it is on par with the best in the world. Let me just put that on record, right? And the people that run it behind the scenes, the Prasarana guys, the engineers, very, very good. We have a problem, though, because we have come to the public transport realm at a very, very late stage. We don't have the culture of public transport. We have a culture of private transportation usage. And, you know, at this point in time, we've got the stamp duty exemption. It is becoming more and more affordable. Not more affordable. It is more affordable than ever before to own your own car. And you can extend your loan to up to 9 years. And the second-hand car system is very, very matured. We don't have a culture. And that is one of the major factors militating against public transport. The other one, of course, has been the COVID and the transmission issues. And of course, the fallout from last year's LRT crash. But by and large, our infrastructure is amazing.
Yeah, but even before COVID, the usage of MRT or transportation, public transportation, has been not very ideal.
For those reasons.
Yes, and because it's not convenient.
You know, because the last mile.
Exactly. So the last mile is always the main deterrent of all of us using the public transport. Because if I were to drive to the MRT station and take the train down to where I want to go, I might as well drive directly to the destination. Right, it saves me more time and in more better comfort. Right,
correct. So, for example, from my house to my son's school is 8 minutes door to door by my car at 7 a.m. Right, if I drop him at the MRT, then he has to change at in town and then take another 5 stops. It takes him about 25 minutes. It's not convenient. But the thing is, right, in Singapore, where there is a big congestion issue, there's not enough real estate. They've got congestion charges. Like in London, right? You've got your congestion charge, right? If those factors are in place and it's too expensive to own your own car, then public transport becomes very, very convenient. It becomes almost axiomatic that you use it.
So there are these competing policy considerations, the policies in place that the government has, you know, wanting to elevate public transportation on one hand, but also encouraging car ownership on the other. It's coming to a head. And in the end, I think the government needs to be more clear on what aims it wants to achieve. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.